Welcome back to Mad About Football. I am George Metellus. We got Juan Arango with us. Kartik Krishnayer is with us as well. And Kevin Walker is here helping us drop some knowledge here on the show. And for our next subject, the next thing we want to talk about here is the news about the United States and their bid for the 2018 or 2022 World Cup. And, you know, the news about 70 cities bidding for the World Cup. Kartik, what information do you have about the U.S. bid for the World Cup? What can you tell us about what you know about that?
Well, Sunil Gulati, first and foremost, blew away the English media who believe that they're somehow owed the World Cup because they invented this game and, well, football needs to come home in 2018. He blew the English media away with a presentation he made at Wembley a year ago when the U.S. played England in a friendly. Following up on that, after the bid was officially submitted, a list of 70 stadiums that they went through and criteria for selection of stadiums. The United States, and again, I guess I'm politicking a little bit here to our friends who may be preferring this World Cup be held in England. And in fact, we talk about maybe, quote, the enemy within. There are a lot of people in the United States that have been so anglicized by watching the Premier League, they think England should host the World Cup over the United States. So let me just point this out real quickly. The United States has more ready-made facilities already existing with proper pitches, the proper dimensions for FIFA regulation pitches for World Cup for the World Cup tournament than any other country that's going to put up a bid. And you know, the only one that would actually come close would be Mexico. Now Russia is going to bid, and they may build some stadiums, but I think England's bid, well, which appears to be the major competition if you listen to the media, is severely handicapped by the size of their stadiums, the size of their pitches. And also a problem that, even though it seems to have diminished, exists with English national team fans, which is hooliganism. And I just had a conversation with a member of the English press the other day who said, you know, the hooliganism problem is not what it was in the 1980s, but it's still there. And there are foreign fans of other national teams who are scared to travel to England. They will not have that fear about coming to the United States or going to Mexico or Russia or wherever else this World Cup, maybe the Netherlands. That's something the U.S. definitely has working in its favor.
Kartik, is it fair to say that the English media suppresses the information regarding that hooliganism in England, and obviously they hype up what you want to call hooliganism abroad or ultra or firms abroad? Would you say that's what you've discovered, that yes. I mean, you've just mentioned that. You've just basically mentioned that they don't talk about it and it still exists. But would you say that there's really this false impression that's being put in on a regular basis by the English press?
Right. I think that you're definitely right, Kevin, because they have done it in order to try and get these tournaments held in England. They did it to make sure they got the Euro 96 awarded. When they wanted to put in a bid for the World Cup in 2006, they acted like there was no hooligan problem, but oh my goodness, go to Italy and these ultras, they're dominating the stadiums in France with PSG. But then there were some incidents when England itself, the national team, traveled abroad and Germany got awarded that World Cup. Now what you have is, I think, the Premier League, the tickets are so expensive that that element is not getting into games. However, they're still organizing around football. They're still going to the pubs in London. I will talk about Chelsea in particular. Chelsea is the granddaddy of them all as far as hooligan clubs in the world. I mean, they have and I'm glad our friend Jonathan is with us today. I know I've told him this off air, but he'll get all sensitive when I say this. But Chelsea's the granddaddy hooligan club of all. They're the club that really kicked it off. And Roman Abramowitz has done a great thing. Maybe it's not a great thing. It's just to line his pocket further, but he's raised the ticket prices. There's a totally different element because obviously they're in a posh part of London. But when Chelsea travels, and you know this, Kevin, from covering Serie A, when they travel to Turin to play Juventus, there is an element that travels with them that doesn't get into the game at Juve. But they're in the pubs, they're in the city, they're causing problems, and everybody knows it's there. But the English media, of course, the English language media, very selective in what they report, don't talk about it.
Well, of course. I mean, right. And you mentioned that. I mean, I connect the dots a little bit better. Last two times they went to Spain, you know, the big the big brouhaha they made up. Oh, you know, if they start making racist comments in Spain about some of our players, we're just going to walk off the pitch. Oh, you know, so they're always trying to point out the negative aspects of every other fan base and every
It's always the fault of the police in Italy. You know, there are incidents with Manchester United fans in Rome. Oh, it's the fault of the police. There's some problem with Middlesbrough fans in Spain. Oh, it's the fault of the police. But then, you know, and it's great because the BBC, they represent it this way on 5 Live. And you've got Scottish fans listening saying, hey, we were in Roma 2 weeks ago for a qualifier. You're a qualifier. We didn't have any problems. And then why are all these English fans having problems? So, I mean, that's the one thing that is kind of the check on them is the fact that there are Scottish fans and Welsh fans and Irish fans in the United Kingdom listening when it is on the radio saying, hey, wait a second, we've gone to Roma, they welcomed us. They didn't say, oh, you know, get in your section and then we're gonna beat the tar out of you. I mean, that's what the Man U fans claim, the Chelsea fans claim. It's always someone else's fault. There's a real victimization complex among English fans, and now they have said, just to conclude this, that they were kind of owed this World Cup. And I see propaganda being spread about how the United States is not a proper football nation, and it was a mistake to give the United States a World Cup in 1994, even though that was a wildly successful World Cup, and that it would be horrible that if England, the home of football, lost this bid to the United States. Well, you know, they live in a vacuum. They live in their own world as far as this stuff is concerned.
They should just shut up. They didn't even make it to that World Cup.
World Cup, yeah.
Thanks to Tommy Brolin. I appreciate, you know, his services to mankind.
I'm of the belief, and we know that the European leagues are the most, you know, followed, probably the most popular and whatever. But, and we live in a very Eurocentric world, especially here in North America. But I love to see World Cups that are not in Europe. You know, I mean, the Germany World Cup was fine. You know, the stadiums are nice and everything. But whenever we get a chance to have it outside of Europe, I get a little more excited. And I would love to see it in the U.S. I mean, especially, and thank God for the NFL, because the NFL has a lot to do with this. Because all these new franchise, almost pretty much every franchise in the NFL has a new stadium, you know, or at least a fairly, either it's new or they renovated their own legendary stadium, as in the case with Soldier Field in Chicago. So I just want to see a World Cup outside of Europe. Maybe I'm being a little, you know, maybe I'm being prejudiced or anti-European in that sense, but I just want to see a World Cup outside of Europe,
to agree with you, George. There's just one thing. There is that time factor when you go to, for say, the Asia zone. And don't forget that the Asia zone is an incredible growth there. I mean, there's just mega interest in football, in all the European leagues, in South American football. I mean, they love it over there. They love it so much that we know they gamble on it extensively. And the only thing is when we look back to 2002, you know, there was a major problem there with the time factor in Korea and Japan. Okay, that was problematic. The next time around, it's going to be in Africa. So this is, you know, this is great because a lot of those time zones are European time zones. There's no problem there. When you come to North America for the large viewing audience that FIFA wants to reach, when they do go to Asia, that traditional base, they end up having problems with it. So I'd agree with you, but I'm a little cautious when will the next one go to, let's say, Australia or Asia again. You know, it could happen, and then there's going to be those difficulties that came up in 2002.
But that's again done for the pleasure of the European viewing audience. And let's face it, when we've had World Cups, let's go back. 86, Mexico, great World Cup, maybe the best World Cup ever. 1990, Italia, a dud, a horrible World Cup. I mean, I remember sitting through those games. They were snooze fest. 94, U.S., great World Cup until the final. The final wasn't very good, but great World Cup. 98, France, snooze fest again. I mean, really, just a bad World Cup. 2002, Korea, Japan, great World Cup. And you have Senegal going deep. You have South Korea going deep. You have Turkey going deep. You have the U.S. going deep. You know, all these new nations, that the spread of football, the spread of the global game. Turkey's always been football mad. They just haven't had a good national team. They've had some good club teams. 2006, Germany. I mean, what can we say? I mean, we enjoy the World Cup, but that was one of the worst World Cups that I can remember.
It was another reason for us to drink beer.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. Much. Get drunk was the only consolation in that thing. So I don't want to see another World Cup in Europe, quite frankly. But I know that that's not realistic.
No, but also the standards and also what FIFA's looking for in a host nation is not realistic in 90% of the rest of the world. I mean, to think that a country like Colombia, for example, is going to be able to host a World Cup based on the demands that Blatter and his boys make, you know, that you have to have a stadium with these types of specifications stuff. 90% of the world is not even capable, don't even have the money to be able to have that kind of setup. Who will? The U.S., most of Europe, a couple of, you know, maybe one or two countries in Africa, Asia, and maybe one country in Latin America.
Yeah, and that's probably maybe Brazil. Brazil might be that country in South America.
And I wasn't even thinking Brazil. I was thinking more towards Mexico.
The name that comes to my mind is Mexico, but they've already hosted it twice. So, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean. You know, it's, you know, an interesting bid a country that probably will not get it, but I think would be so intriguing is Qatar. I know they might not get it, but, you know, Qatar has the highest highest per capita income of any nation, I believe, you know, with all the oil and all that going down there. I think I would love to see that. Maybe not in 18, but 2022, I think that could be real interesting if they had a World Cup there. I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think they have enough pull in FIFA to make it happen, but I would love to see. That's a country that has
the rotation.
Money.
If Blatter sticks with the rotation as he's supposed to, Qatar has a chance, Australia has a chance, the United States has a chance, Mexico, England does not.
It would be more realistic to see it in Australia than to see it in Qatar, first of all. I'm not sure how the alcohol laws are in Qatar and which are some of the biggest sponsors for the World Cup, for FIFA, you know the big breweries, you know, beer, I mean, alcohol. Those are some of the big sponsors as far as, you know, the World Cup is concerned, or any sports event for that matter. So to have it in Qatar, to have it in Saudi Arabia, or any of those big petrodollar type of countries, I don't see it happening because of that.
I'm not quite sure which country it is, but I think that one of those countries is sort of party central for the Arab elite. It's either Bahrain or Qatar.
It's Dubai. Yeah, I don't know.
Dubai. Is the UAE, I think Dubai.
Yeah. And that's another country that was considering it, but I don't know what their status is right now.
But Qatar has been more liberal and more Western. I mean, they've been very, very pro US in that region, been a US ally for years. But, you know, getting back to the whole subject of England, guys, I mean, are you as bothered as I am by this continued drumbeat of jingoism and xenophobia from the English media, which unfortunately a lot of people in the United States read because they're anglicized by watching FSC and watching Satanta. They don't watch Gold TV. They don't seem to watch a Telefutura or Univision. They seem to now be believing that England somehow is entitled to have this world, to host this World Cup, and that every other bid should be withdrawn, and that somehow the U.S. bid is flawed because we're not England.
I think you've got it right. I think there's a large population of expats from the islands, from the homelands, for the home countries, as it would be. And so, yeah, I think the right appropriate would be the appropriate word is that we have been anglicized on this side of the pond, and not necessarily Europeanized. Because, again, you know, when you think of Europe, it's more than just England. And so the English-speaking culture over here has sort of readily accepted that England is the parent of the home country, the parent country. And they do support them in that bid, I'd assume. The fan base supporting teams like Liverpool and Man U, I see a lot more of those fans over here. I do see fans from the other leagues, which are generally the ethnic communities that are supporting their all-time favorite teams that they've stuck loyal to them. But we need to switch that because we need to help that break down this, as you said before, the news media's selective presentation of what's actually going on, and perhaps perhaps people will start to tune in our own ways. What that's what we're trying to do with Mad About Football and Serie A Weekly and a few of the other podcasts and blogging communities that we all belong to. We're trying to present the other leagues that are just as viable and have just as a big a footprint in the game, and people need to recognize that. So my hope is that people will tune in to the other leagues and won't be so biased in supporting England on everything.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree with that 100%.
I come from the school, I guess, because my information comes from a different avenue that they don't see it as such. They see it as the U.S. being the lead candidate for 2018 or 2022.
I hope that's right, because the English language
because
the
Spanish
other way.
Market really doesn't give a shit about what England has to say. You know what I mean? Most of the Spanish market, when England starts talking, they just start, in their head, they start hearing the Maradona go over and over and over and over and over and over.
Here's a great story. You know, the Guardian podcast last year, after England got eliminated from the Euros, Euro qualifying, they had a guy from Brazil on the line, some Brazilian reporter, and he said, the Guardian host asked, well, what's the reaction down in Brazil? Must be great shock that England was eliminated. And the guy said, it's not Germany, it's not Italy, it's not Holland. We really don't rate England. It didn't matter to us. We didn't think twice about it.
Right. Well, you have to look at the English. You have to look at the English media's response to all that. How much coverage did they present of the Euros? Nothing. They just. It was like just voided from their memory, and that alone shows you. As a Canadian, I'm a little bit out there compared to you guys. When we watch things like the Olympics, we see, for instance, American media. There's always the American athletes that are front and center, and I guess I'm kind of thinking of that movie Patton with George C. Scott. America cannot tolerate a loser. So in the same frame of mind. The camera usually pans away, I find, when I'm watching American media comment on these big game sports, because America has to be up front. With soccer, it's a little bit different, because although the American game has come a long way, and I see vast improvements in the national side, it still has a long way to go in the eyes of the rest of the world. And I think there's... I think that the U.S. media is cognizant of that they can't really focus only on their team. Now, place England in that position. What do? England doesn't show up for the Euros. They don't talk about it. So it's kind of disgusting from a fan of the beautiful game to not get that coverage when you really need it the most for these big tournaments, whether it's whether it's the Euros, whether it's regional tournaments, whether it's the international, where everybody takes part in the World Cup. It would be, what would England do if the next World Cup they don't qualify for it? They're not going to present any news on it. I mean, that was the English media. That would just be negligent, very extremely negligent on their part.
Yeah,
and
I was actually over there. Go ahead. I was just going to
go ahead.
I was there about a week before the 94 World Cup kicked off here in Chicago, and. Ireland had qualified, so it was really a great embarrassment. It wasn't just that England did not qualify. Ireland qualified and was going with Bobby Charlton as their manager, great English legend. And they tried to pretend like it was not a serious World Cup because it was being played in the United States. Well, who really wants to play in that poxy country that doesn't get football? They're busy watching baseball, and they'll rattle off all the American sports anyway. So when they fail, they try and justify their failure by marginalizing or ridiculing the event, and I'm sure they did that with the Euros this summer.
Well, they did. God, I think it was Sky that had a promo on, people throwing their TVs out of the window, saying, well, England's not going to be on. But, we'll show some of the Euro 2008 games. And I was like, whoa, that's really funny. I found it comical to see all these promos and stuff that Sky was putting on anyway. But
I think this is where the TV networks like Gold TV and Univision. Well, Univision is basically pretty much in every – it's like a normal channel now, pretty much in every market in America. but Gold TV, these are where it's important that these networks, first of all, they, I know they have English language, which helps a lot, but they really have to start getting on more cable systems all over the country to give people an option to see something else, you know, because you get inundated with all the English and all that, the English matches and the English national team. And these people are, especially if you're kind of a novice soccer fan who doesn't know much about, you can find this stuff on the internet, they're going to get sucked into that. And then they're going to think, then it's going to also reflect in, I think also some of the side effect is, it's going to reflect in how they watch MLS and what they're going to expect from MLS or what they're going to expect from the U.S. national team. So you have to, we have, you know, things like Gold TV, networks like Gold TV and other outlets that, you know, show or talk about the Serie A and La Liga and even, you know, Brazil, the Brasileirao and Argentina, Clausura, Mexico. Those entities have to find a way to get on television in these major markets and the, you know, the cable carriers and the satellite carriers and give them an option to watch these things. Because if not, we're going to get more and more anglicized and then it's going to really be one-sided and then you're not going to see the whole picture, and it, that's not going to be good. That's not good at all. So it's you know, this is where the these networks really have to come in and start to put their foot down.
Well, it's not just them. It's, you know, also networks like you know, like
ESPN,
like ESPN, like Sirius. Because I mean, Sirius, they only put on this Chelsea matches and sometimes Celtic. Okay. And
Juan, you telling me Celtic versus Hibernian doesn't do it for you?
Oh, dude, that's Viagra for me, man.
But Kevin, is it the same way in Canada? Is everything in Canada anglicized in your football coverage?
Well, you know what, we get matches from France up here. We get TV 5. And so you get to actually watch French footy. There's some regional networks that will present Serie A soccer on a regular basis. I mean, when I go to my TV set during the week, I could pretty well watch almost all the Serie A matches. And of course, they're anglicized in the sense of they're trying to. A couple of years back, they would have had just Rai TV, which would have the, you know, the Italian commentary, but some of the regional channels decided to broaden the, you know, I guess just broaden the listenership and present the games with English commentary, which I thought was great. But either way, I would have accepted it because I was getting to view the sport. And I know we all have done this at a certain time, whether it's in a foreign language or whether it's just bad commentary. What do? You turn the sound down and you still watch the channel and you watch the game. I think the problem here is that at the highest level in these media, you know, these media corporations, they've somehow decided U.S., English language, EPL league. That's how they want to pair it together. And of course, when MLS comes along, they're going to obviously present it with their own homegrown talent, and that's great. And that's, you know, it's good for the sport. But where are all these other leagues that are top notch? You know, why aren't we seeing, you know, if we're going to show X number of matches from the EPL, why aren't we seeing the same from La Liga, from Serie A, from even League One and Bundesliga, or even the Dutch league? There should be viable options other than that one particular league, because there's going to be English commentary, and we want everybody to understand what's going on.
We even have a problem with MLS because I think that there is now a tendency among American footy fans to view MLS by a very English standard, to say, well, the style of play isn't what we see in the Premier League when the climate is different here. It doesn't rain 350 days a year, and it's not always dreary. You know, there's some parts of this country that are very, very warm in the summer. And they just apply a strictly English standard to everything that goes on, anglicized standard, to everything that goes on even domestically in the football scene, and even to the national team and what have you, with the CONCACAF versus UEFA. And it's very boring to listen to.
Yeah. One thing I've learned about what in the years that, first of all, you make a great point, Kartik. I mean, the English MLS is what, 15 years old, I think 16? Just compared to England, it's a baby. The English league is a baby. So you can't expect the quality to be the same. And one thing I've learned, and I've tried to program myself in my mind when I watch MLS, is to not expect, you know, the Premiership, not expect La Liga, not expect Serie A, to just let it be what it is and let it grow from there. So I think that's something that you have to train your mind to watch when you watch these games, the MLS, you know.
But here's the thing, too. When you have guys out there like the – and mind you, these aren't the most trustworthy of sources as far as, you know, what kind of quality should be going in, you know, as far as football is concerned. When you have the Alexi Lalas of the world, when you have the John Harks of the world, when you have the Eric Winaldas of the world going and telling a novice soccer fan that, hey, the MLS is just as good as and even just as competitive as the Premiership, as La Liga, as this, as that, and the other, you're getting sold a bill of goods. And if you're not a person that knows about the game, you're just getting into the game for whatever reason. Your kid's playing, you know, at the park, or because, you know, you found yourself a new girlfriend or whatever. It's a reason, you know, you're going to say, oh, okay, well, fine. And then you are setting yourself up, or they're setting you up for a huge disappointment. So, I mean, also the expectations that the media here in the States gives you is not exactly what, you know, should be given to American or novice American or novice, you know, soccer fans in general here in the States.
These other leagues, they've taken a century to develop. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's a mindset of the people that are marketing the game here in North America, and possibly how they view people through whatever means, statistical means. But we grew up in a society here where everybody wants satisfaction now, and that means they want a Premier League now. But the reality is it takes time to develop a Premier League. Mm-hmm. I've talked to you guys about this before. I've talked to other people. I've talked to the guys at WSD, and that's just the reality. Now, with regards to what I've seen recently, well, I just was able to catch some highlights the other night from the Toronto FC game against Columbus, and let me tell you, the caliber of the game looks really exciting and good, and it's, you know, it's, I'm hoping that this year, as I watch the game, I can really get into it, because I'll be honest, I haven't been watching it in the past, and now I do. I have to watch it because I'm trying to talk about the news. And I think that the MLS is developing at the pace that it should be developing at, and people need to – the fan base that's there, that's dedicated. You guys know that Toronto is definitely a soccer town, and so we've got the fan base. And we're willing to be, you know, listen, you're dealing with a city that hasn't won an NHL, they haven't won the Stanley Cup in over 40 years, and yet they still pack the Air Canada Center. So dedication, you're always, hopefully what'll happen is the fan base across the league will be there and support their clubs, and that continued support will help the league better itself and develop into a Premier League.
Just for the record, after the Miami Fusion was disbanded, I didn't have a team to root for in the MLS. Then I saw the crowd in Toronto, and I was like, "That's my team. That is my team." If there's any, after I saw the crowd in Toronto and how wild they are, I mean, it's litter on the damn pitch. There's litter. It's much debris and whatever you want to call it on the pitch. I said, "That's my new favorite team." So now Toronto's my favorite team for that reason. After Miami Fusion left, I was like, I can't really cheer, and I kind of lost a little bit of interest. But after I saw how wild the Toronto fans were, I was like, that's my squad now. From now on, so I'm a TFC fan now.
The problem is we have so many former Fusion guys on Salt Lake, I've decided to start rooting for them. I mean, even in the coaching staff, we have all this.
I'm still trying George, to find
you, mine. You need to get Mr. Lopez to come up here to Toronto, and he'll never want to go back home.
Oh, I have to go to Toronto. I've heard so many good things.
I might take a swing up there in Toronto sometime soon. Hopefully, I'll see. But right now, my team, I gotta go for the underdog. I gotta. Well, I don't know if they're such an underdog anymore, but you know, I think I'll take Seattle as my team.
Yeah. I wanted to ask Kartik a question real quick. There's, you know, you've heard the talk about DC United. How big of a blow would it be if DC United moved to St. Louis? What's your take on that?
You want to know my truth about this and my my opinion, maybe I should be more objective about it, but I don't think MLS is in business right now if it's not for DC United. I mean, they were the club that elevated this league the first couple of years. It was almost like a pub rec league other than United the first couple of years. But United was able to beat Basco in the Inter-American Cup. They were able to win the CONCACAF Champions League, or Champions Cup at the time, beating Toluca in the final. They're the only team that stepped out from this very odd model of MLS with a lot of parity, trying to attract soccer moms to games. You know, everybody else in the league, they were attracting the family crowd. DC United said, you know what, we're going to get hardcore supporters. We got the Barra Brava. We're going to bring in Bolivian support. We're going to bring in Salvadoran support, Honduran support, local support. And they made it a football atmosphere. And they taught MLS what football was about, the passion of football. I don't think the league's in business without DC. Now we've got Toronto. Now we got Seattle. Now we've got these other anchor clubs that are going to carry us. And so the league will stay in business even if DC disappears. But I don't think the league's at this point. So I'm just really... put out by the whole thing, to be honest with you. If New York can get a new stadium and, you know, just what has been a trash club. I mean, I'm still, as a Fusion fan, very unhappy that we lost our club, but yet New York and New England, whose attendances were roughly the same if you take out doubleheader games and the fact that they would just kind of just arbitrarily add 5,000 to every crowd in those two venues to make it look respectable. Our crowds at Lockhart were as big as the crowds in Foxborough and in Giant Stadium throughout the time we had.
Adding to that, even in New York, and I was talking to Gio the other day, even in New York, the Red Bulls aren't their team.
They got a USL team coming next year. They got a USL team coming next year, and that's, I think they're going to compete with the Red Bulls. I think they're going to take a lot of fans away.
Well, because first of all, they've lost everybody from everybody east, let's say Long Island, all that area, Westchester County. They've lost all that fan base right there because they're not willing to go and make the drive all the way into New Jersey to watch a team that's at best mediocre and a team that really makes no effort as far as publicity and marketing and reaching out into the community to help them out. I mean, they're really not doing it. And add to the fact that you have a sports market in New York, first of all, that's really diluted in the sense that you have so many events, so many teams going on, you know, that are playing simultaneously, and the prices, and as far as you know, the lack of access you have to these teams, the Red Bulls are still yet one of the more accessible ones, but people don't want to go. I mean, for all these reasons that I mentioned before. I mean, they're dropping the ball big time in a market like New York.
Yeah,
and the opening was there for USL to take it and say we're going to compete with MLS in that market, even though they've stayed out of that. I mean, Miami is the only market that USL has ever gone into that was a former MLS market, and they haven't been ever in the same market together, but New York will be the test case for that.
Oh, I think they'll probably even sell out more than – they will sell out more games than the Red Bulls will. No doubt in my mind.
That's pathetic. I don't know if that's pathetic. If the major, that's like saying a minor league team, because in terms of the hierarchy, MLS is Division One and then Two and Three. That's a minor league team going into the same city as the Mets and the Yankees and outdrawing the Mets and the Yankees. Now I know.
You know what? Right now, I think they would probably be doing. You know, minor league team would probably be drawing the Yankees and the Mets based on how much those tickets cost too.
Well, that's true.
And I think also after CONCACAF, I mean, you talk to MLS people, and they're unfazed by MLS's failure in CONCACAF, but you talk to just people around the game that are not emotionally invested in MLS or USL or whatever, or US soccer, and they say, look, USL made such a big impression by what the Impact did and what the Islanders did, and then the Impact selling, and Kevin, you can speak to this, the Impact selling 60,000 tickets for that first leg up there against Santos, that there are a lot of people that have been actually coming to me because they know I have a USL team that I cover and I have a good relationship with the front office. They're coming to me about USL saying, we're going to cover you. And Luis is one of the guys, actually, who was on the show earlier. We're going to cover USL more this year because of what happened in CONCACAF. We never paid attention to it. We saw it as a second division, but now we're seeing it as kind of like almost a co-first division.
Right.
Well, speaking of the USL, Kartek, any opinions? And speaking on us north of the border here, any opinions of the Whitecaps? Any opinions on, for instance, a future bid by Montreal Impact to move over to, to the other league?
I thought this year, just speaking about this season, the Whitecaps should not have let Sombrongo go. He's now with the Impact. I think he's going to make a huge difference for Montreal this season and in the Canadian Cup. I mean, they obviously, the three of them, Toronto and two USL teams, are going to be fighting for that CONCACAF spot. Maybe Montreal gets the leg up because they got Sombrongo. Obviously, Dero coming to Toronto helps. Vancouver, it's going to be interesting. Kevin, what's going on with BC Place? We heard rumors this week that it may not happen. They may not put the roof over it.
I think they might have to get their own designated stadium. I mean, that's what happened with Toronto, soccer-specific stadium. So I don't understand why they would not, they'd make an exception for Vancouver. So I can't tell you anything right now at this point.
Yeah, it's all up in the air, it seems like. Montreal, as far as their bid's concerned, what I had heard, and maybe you've heard this too, Kevin, was that the Saputos did not want to pay $40 million to join MLS because they saw their team doing so well in CONCACAF without having to move up to another league, because through USL they were still able to get in and go to the knockout stages. Now they're thinking twice about it because of what's going on in USL. But I'm actually hearing, and Juan, you and I have talked about this off air, that there may be some changes in USL coming up that try and make it more competitive with MLS to keep some of these markets like Miami and Montreal and the other markets that MLS may grab in the future.
Let me ask you guys something real quick here. We know about back in the 60s, you had the AFL-NFL merger. And I think by that statement, maybe you probably know where I'm going with this. But do you think in the next, 4 or 5 years, if the USL continues to make inroads and make a dent in the MLS, that there's going to have to be some kind of merger? Because it seems to me like, especially if they're in the same cities or within the same geographic regions, that they're going to have this competition there. And in North America, where soccer isn't king, you can't really have dueling soccer leagues. So do you see a merger maybe in 5 or 10 years? What do you see as the prospect for that?
I bow to Kartek's expertise.
Oh, thanks. There's a lot going on within USL that may get resolved in the next 6 months to a year. With Umbro, they own USL and they've been bought by Nike. And there's some talk of either USL becoming a stronger entity and then pushing for that merger eventually, or some of the stronger clubs in the bigger markets in USL. And that would not necessarily mean the stronger clubs, because Rochester and Charleston are very strong clubs, but they're not markets that MLS could ever support an MLS team or a first division team.
Are you talking more like a Carolina Railhawks or one of those?
Carolina, Miami, Montreal, those are bigger markets. And they may be able to support an MLS team that they may even, there's even some talk that they may try and really assert themselves within USL, force some changes to make it more competitive with MLS to eventually force this merger. But there's been a lack of leadership by U.S. soccer. They allowed USL to go ahead and expand into New York on the heels of the Champions League, which was an embarrassment for MLS and a great triumph for USL on the backs of really MLS teams only winning half the games against USL teams in U.S. Open Cup. And in Canadian Cup, you had Montreal winning it, USL team. So basically, U.S. soccer has taken a hands-off approach. They say, well, MLS is our first division. And I heard that Sunil Gulati was really unhappy when he went down to El Salvador for the U.S. El Salvador game, and he saw all these Miami FC billboards all over the place. And he said, they're not our sanctioned first division. Miami FC's in the second division. We don't want those billboards there. But there's been no leadership to try and stop that from happening.
Well, is there a way to stop it technically in another country or another market at all?
Maybe not, but they could have told USL, hey, don't go into the New York market. We'll not that I'm against it, because I think that MetroStars team, or Red Bulls as they're called now, are failed franchise, personally.
And yeah.
If MLS were operated differently, they would have shut that team down long ago. But it's one of those things where now we had a history in this country in the 1930s of leagues competing with each other, and then in the 1960s and really hurting the game. And obviously we're at a much further along point in the evolution of soccer in the United States. And you know, there's so many football fans that have taken to the game because of television in the last 10 years that you don't think anything really bad could ever happen. But there's got to be some sort of coming together, even if it's promotion relegation is tough for the U.S., but even if it's, okay, USL, and they actually had this arrangement at one time. USL is the designated second division, and this club is an affiliate of this MLS club. But now that USL clubs have gone to CONCACAF and been more successful than the MLS clubs, USL is probably not going to accept that kind of arrangement. And they're going to say, hey, you know, we have to be on equal footing. Well, we actually did better in the one international tournament you can judge us by. So...
Wow.
It's a long road. I mean, what do you guys think as far as suggestions for this?
I think they should merge. I think that it would get to a point where you'd have two teams from different leagues in the same city competing in the same sport, and I think it would hurt the game. I think they should merge, and I'm kind of a traditionalist, but I think they should have a promotion and relegation system. I know that they won, it wouldn't happen. But I think that they should have a clear first division and a clear second division, and then merge it into some kind of unified structure, whether it's, you know, under U.S. soccer or whatever. But I think they should merge and then have a promotion and relegation, and then give, you know, a team like a Rochester. You know, like you said, they couldn't support an MLS team, but maybe they could support a first division team. Maybe the fact that their team is at the top levels playing against the LA Galaxy might, you know, solidify the community to support the team, to put more money in the team. So I think they should merge and, you know, make it so that there's one, like a nice structured ladder for teams to go up and make their move. I think that's what they should do.
One thing's what I want. One thing's what's actually going to happen, what might happen. I believe also in promotion relegation, but teams like Seattle, you know, the new expansion teams like Chivas, Real Salt Lake, and other teams that paid that fee to get into MLS, part of that fee wasn't to go into second division. So I know that for sure all the MLS teams are going to be crying to high heaven that, hey, you know, this isn't going to happen because we invested too much money for all of a sudden the system to get turned around on us for the good of the game, not for the good of our franchise.
So you're basically saying don't change the game plan now, but as I listen to everybody on the show, I'm pretty sure, maybe Kardec could confirm this afterwards, but I'm pretty sure we're all traditional in the format that we like to watch when we watch league soccer, and it happens to do with promotion being leagues that have none of this playoff stuff, and it's just promotion and relegation. The winner of the league is celebrated as the winner of the league. If you want to have some type of a playoff arrangement, then you make it right from the beginning of the season where you have some type of a cup tournament, and that's maybe the way they should handle it. But I see your point. You've got people who've joined on and they've expected a certain certain North American standard as far as how the league goes, and they wouldn't want to be relegated to a second division. But as a fan, I definitely like seeing that because it makes, you know, there's two races going on every year.
Of course,
the race to see who stays up and the race to see who's the winner of the of the whole thing, and it's enjoyable to watch.
Of course,
you can actually integrate both. Mexico does both. They have a playoff and they relegate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean every country in the world has pretty much, you know, their promotion, relegation, you know, and the championship and cup races as well.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Cardi. I was going to say the ultimate problem is MLS's salary cap. The reason why USL is so competitive, the reason why USL is not like your traditional second division in any other country, is because MLS has the salary cap. And because they have the cap and it's so low, the guys who go to USL are not your bottom-end players, but they're your middle-tier players. You have top-tier players in MLS and bottom-tier players. The guys who get squeezed are the guys making 50, 75 that, you know, when you're trying to get under the cap, it's easier to cut those guys than to cut the guys making 20,000. So those guys all end up in USL. And so guess what? USL has a lot of their teams are more complete than MLS teams because they've got all of your, you know, typical average rank and file players, the guys you need to fill out squads. And those are the guys do well that you need in international competition. So basically, this problem, this whole competition has been caused by MLS's restrictive rules and the fact that teams don't own their own players. The player registration is owned by the league. And that guys who are making $75,000, $50,000, who have a couple years under their belt in MLS, when a team needs to get under the cap, and the cap is punitive in MLS to punish you if you're not under the cap, then those are the guys cut. It's not the guy that's just been drafted who's making $20,000. So then those guys end up going to Montreal Impact and Puerto Rico Islanders and these teams.
Right.
And they go much further in CONCACAF than the MLS team. So that's what's caused this. That's the root cause, is MLS's strange structure, the rule structure in the league being so foreign compared to any other league in world football.
Well, I mean, you were mentioning to me earlier today about, you know, part of the reason, you know, Barcelona didn't come in and go on because, hey, we're paying money, we're paying salary, we're paying this, we're paying that for this player, yet the player doesn't belong to us completely. What's the logic behind this? You were telling us about when you met Ruud Gullit at the combines.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. He said to me and to some other reporters there, what do you mean I can't just buy this guy and I can't just add this player? This was at Lockhart Stadium last year. He was there with Lawless and Paul Bravo from the Galaxy, and he was not clear on the rules. And no one had pointed out the rules to him about the league when he decided to become the coach of the Galaxy. He assumed because they had bought Beckham and they had Landon Donovan, the two players he had heard of on that team, that they could be this super club and buy players from around the globe, or even just the best American players since there are foreign player limits in MLS. But he did not realize there's an application system and a salary cap, and you can only have 18 guys, and you end up, since you have two guys that took up so much under the cap, and Donovan and Beckham, you have to, and Carlos Ruiz also, so three guys, you have to cut a bunch of guys who end up going to USL, and they end up being better than the guys you keep on your team. And he was just unfamiliar with the system. And I think Barcelona, same thing. I think Red Bull, to a certain extent, coming from Austria, same thing. They've had some issues with their youth academy where they develop players. And then in their academy at Red Bull, and then they tried to sign them to Red Bull New York. And MLS has said, wait a second. No, you don't own the player. We own the player. Get in line. They're going into the allocation draft. And New York may not have the first pick in the allocation draft. It may be Colorado, and they pick up the guy who Red Bull developed.
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's weird because the way the MLS does it, it's almost un-American. You know, I mean, when you consider the whole capitalism and competition.
It's socialist.
It's you know, I mean, it really is.
Where have you been, George?
I'm sorry. But it just seems un-American. I mean, especially baseball, which is quote-unquote the American game, which we all know football, American football is the true passion of the United States. But baseball is a quote-unquote American game. And baseball doesn't have any salary cap, doesn't have any of those restrictions. You know, the Yankees, they spend billions of dollars to buy players. And, you know, the health of the game is pretty good, except for the whole steroids thing. But so it just seems like the way the MLS does it, I know they're being financially, trying to be fiscally responsible because money is ultimately what keeps the league going. But I would think that they've reached the point now where it's a viable business because it's been around long enough where they can kind of let loose those restrictions and then allow the teams to make the moves and develop their youth academies so that their teams can be competitive and, you know, be good enough to challenge on an international level as well. So it just, I think maybe it's time for the MLS to change their fiscal, you know, philosophy. So,
let me change the subject real quick to probably one of the biggest issues or biggest news stories, I believe, in U.S. soccer so far this year, and has to do nothing with goings on the pitch. Actually, it's going on outside the pitch. The fact that Fox got the rights to the Champions League. I mean, it's a tournament that everybody's associated, you know, with ESPN for the past, almost 15 years. You know, everybody's used to seeing Tommy Smith and Derrick Ray on a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon doing these games, regardless of who they are. As, you know, time's gone by and the U.S. media or the U.S. soccer fan has become more anglicized, we've come only to see Manchester United and Liverpool play every other week. Guys, how big is this? How big is Fox getting the Champions League to the whole panorama of U.S. soccer on television?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, we've talked about this previously, Juan, off air.
Yeah.
That it just kind of changes the whole dynamic of who the big dog is, so to speak, in the room for football fans in the United States. And now it's Fox, which is, unfortunately, from going back to our discussion a little while ago, the more anglicized network of the two between ESPN and FSC. And hopefully they open it up a little bit. They show more Barca. They show more Real Madrid. They show more Bayern Munich. I'm a big fan of the Bundesliga. I'm a big fan of watching German football. And, you know, you never see German teams anymore in ESPN's coverage. You're just unless they happen to be drawn in with an English team, then you may see them. But I haven't seen very much of Bayern Munich or Barcelona or Real Madrid, except when I go back and watch the games on the internet after. And hopefully that will change. But with Setanta, being an Irish company and FSC now holding the rights, I hope that that's not the case. It's the one thing I'm worried about. I am encouraged by the fact that they're going to use FX. They're going to use Fox Sports Net. I think their overall commitment to the package will probably be greater than ESPN. But I am kind of worried about the excessive anglicization because, of course, you know, there's a very good chance we're going to have two Premier League teams again in the final this year of the Champions League. But that by no means means the Premier League's best league in the world, because you look at the UEFA Cup and you had one Premier League team in the final 16, and you had like four Bundesliga teams. You had several teams from Ukraine. You had several teams from other top leagues, several French teams. So, you know, hopefully they're not overly British in their approach.
And this is 2-1. This is 2-1 for Fox, isn't it? Because they won the rights also to broadcast the Champions League in Central and South America.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So, you know, that's obviously there's just so much going on right now that's changing. I'm going to throw one out there. I would really wish that Setanta wouldn't be a broadcaster anymore for North America for the EPL, but that remains to be seen. So,
we'll see.
Setanta covers a few other leagues. One of the things they didn't carry in England, for instance, this last year has been Serie A soccer, football, and interesting enough, the first match shown all year had to do with the arrival of David Beckham at AC Milan. So England was sort of lost their coverage of Serie A football until very recently when they had that match appear again on the radar screen.
Yeah, it's kind of like 6 degrees of separation to the Premier League. I mean, that's what it is, you know. But I spoke to somebody today, very close to ESPN actually, and he had told me that, you know, that people on the inside are kind of regretting the fact that they didn't put more of a fight as far as, you know, trying to keep the Champions League now, because now their three big brands, if you want to call them that, are MLS, the World Cup, and the U.S. men's national team. Okay. You know, fine, great. And I told Cardick before, hey, you know what? Great, they're going to have great ratings every 4 years. You know, and that's not the way you run a business if you're trying to commit to a particular sport.
How are the ratings for the national team now? Because I was actually told by someone at Fox that ESPN's ratings for the U.S. national team have gone down recently. They're still decent, but they're not what they were a few years ago.
I wouldn't know, but I know for sure that they do televise the U.S. national team games in Spanish as well. You know, let's be honest,
Univision has an exclusive agreement to do the U.S. national team games in Spanish,
They claim. Yes. And then, you know, they also do a lot of the Mexican national team games. And so does Telemundo.
Yeah. So they're not actually exclusive. Univision keeps telling me they have exclusive U.S. national team rights, but maybe they don't. Maybe they just broadcast every game, but they have competing rights with ESPN.
Probably. You know, one does the English, one does the Spanish. But that's the whole, you know, that's the nature of the beast. And let's be honest, the big ratings getter here in the United States is not the U.S. national team. It's the Mexican national team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the Mexican.
Oh, yeah.
Mexican league. They're, and this is the other thing. I'm so glad we had Luis on the show today, mm-hmm. because I'm a big fan of Mexican football, even though I'm a U.S. national team fan.
Mm-hmm.
There are three times, four times as many people that watch the Mexican league in this country than watch the English Premier League. Like, you would not know that by the press in this country. Mm-hmm. So,
it depends which press you're going to. I mean, when you start listening to the Spanish press, it seems like Americans just play baseball.
For real.
So, I mean, it depends. It depends which end of the spectrum you're on. You know, I mean.
Oh, the English language press thinks too. I mean, it's just that they're focused on the English league, and the Spanish press is focused on the Mexican league, and there's no press for the American game.
That's true. I mean, you know, because nobody, you know, in Spanish, they really don't care about the MLS. I mean, that's part of the reason why, you know, Miami FC was in such a conundrum. During the off season, nobody really. I mean. Argentines in Miami care about their league. Mexicans care about their league. Brazilians care about the Brasileirão. You know, obviously, yes, they do care about Spain and Italy and France and England and so on and so forth. But their leagues are the ones that they look at first. They're not going to go and look at MLS or the Mexican league.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way that's the way the Spanish market is, at least.
All right. Well, we spoke about it earlier. Any chance of English coverage of the Mexican League games is just not going to happen because of the anglicized view of sports coverage. So it's just not going to happen, and it's a shame because I can recall many times during the NFL season that I could flip the channels and I'll see more Mexican League games on the air. Than NFL games.
Mm-hmm.
I could, you know, three different Mexican League games will be on the same time on Univision, Telefutura, and I think Galavision also broadcast the games. And then NFL is just two, you know. And sometimes they're not even on at the same time. You have the AFC package and you have the NFC, you know, down here in Miami. And then you get all three of Mexican League games at the same time. So I would go as far as to say that the Mexican League games are as, I wouldn't say they have higher ratings than the NFL, but they are pretty close.
And now with Telemundo having exclusive rights to Chivas games, there you have another mix into, you know, another quotient into the mix.
Right.
So that's part of, you know, the like I said, it's two completely different markets in the U.S. when you're talking about the Spanish market. They really don't give a rat's ass about the Premiership. To them, it's the Spanish League, the Mexican League, and the other leagues in South America, Copa Lib, Copa Sudamericana, all of that. That's what they care about.
Right.
For them, the Premiership is just, okay, fine, it's the Premiership, big deal.
Just to go back to the Champions League, I hope, you know, Fox does, you know, Cardick mentioned that they're going to be showing games on FX and on the Fox Sports Net, you know, with the different regions, Atlantic, Midwest, all of that, Pacific. I hope that they really do show, you know, a lot of games and, you know, from different teams, not just England. But, you know, if Roma, I mean, a couple years ago, they showed an English team playing somebody and, like, Valencia and Roma were playing or something like that. And it was like, come on, I want to see Valencia-Roma. That was a more entertaining game. I think even in terms of going to the next round. There were a lot of implications in that game. I can't remember if those are the teams, but they weren't English teams, you know. And it's like,
I agree with you, George.
You know,
I agree with you. I agree with you fully. Yeah. They need a better selection team. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so, you know, when ESPN did the shows, you went and did the selections. You know right away that Manchester United versus anybody is going to go on first before, let's say, Barcelona. You know, Barcelona, Bayern Munich.
Right.
It's just the reality of how the game is here on television, you know.
Right.
But I mean, they're happy. They, you know, according to what I've, you know, done in my scouring, my interviewing and stuff, they said that they're pretty much happy with the, you know, with the brands and the selections that they have as far as soccer is concerned after May 27th.
Well, I'm looking at
is it them just trying to tell me what I think, what they think they want me to hear, or is it damage control? I don't know. You know, for on one hand, you know, you got, they got to be political. On the other hand, you know what? They are doing damage control. So we'll see in the coming days and weeks and months and years how that turns out to be. So anyways, guys,
I think what we have to just real quick, I think what we have to do as those of us, the consumers, we really have to put pressure on Fox. We got to send them emails and letters and really put pressure on them to put the stuff that we want to see for the Champions League. So I think a lot of it is going to come down to the viewers and the ratings and what kind of pressure we put on the programmers there. I think that's important. We're going to have to make some noise, a little bit of noise in that respect.
Hey, and we got the right people to do it. So we're going to be really in good shape in the next coming years. It seems very exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Champions League next year on Fox. Guys, we have done a crazy long show tonight. It was a pleasure to have you all on.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Special thanks go out to my boy.
Got a surprise for you, son.
No, Dad! Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, I am. You're not getting a Porsche.
Let me tell you something, son. A driver don't pick the cars. Mm-mm. Cars pick the driver.
I'm sorry about that. I'll cut that out. Guys, it was a pleasure to have you on. And also, special thanks to Luis Bueno from CNNSI, our boy Mike Lopez, who had to go to sleep because it was past his bedtime. special thanks also to both of you guys. Kevin, thanks, man, as always. Thanks for coming in.
Carter, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, as always.
So we look forward to the upcoming weeks. Hopefully Barcelona beats that evil empire called the Premiership and Manchester United and Chelsea and the rest of those teams. You heard me, Jonathan. Yeah, I do hope that Chelsea loses to Barcelona. Thank you.
So, watch out for the hooligan in Barcelona.
Oh, whatever, man. I got the Bada Bravos backing my ass up, so it don't matter. Anyway, so for Carnegie.
And don't forget UEFA Cup, man. UK for Cup is real interesting. Don't forget that.
Oh yeah, no doubt. That's gonna be really interesting. So we got a lot of soccer coming up in the next month and a half or so. So hold on to your butts, because it's gonna be coming fast and furious. So for Cardiff, for Kevin, for George, for Luis, and for El Pibe de Oro, this is Juan saying peace. Thank you for existing.